The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Water. Sparkling water. Lemon. Osmosis. Carbonated. Filtered. Distilled. See? In trouble.
Yo, water lovers, how's it going out there? You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Hear about the water. You heard. Pittsfield has a rock and roll show for water that you didn't know it had. Every Tuesday at 2 at here at WTBR-FM, and today we have a great guest. He runs the local Veterans for Peace. Great friend of the show, Eric Wasileski. And he'll be having a conversation about the Straits of Hormuz because he was there. He was in that strait. And he was in the Persian Gulf. And he's a Navy man. So it's all about the water. Super psyched to have you with us. We got some music coming your way. Let's take a peek at what's up in that world. Got some water news, a little water poetry, and also some water comedy coming your way. It's kind of funny, the water comedy, because today we're going to have a little bit of water joke around a Boston accent. Nothing personal, but right there. Let's go take a peek at what we got coming for some music, water music, all kinds of water rock and roll here at And So It Flows. Let's see, we're going to set. This might not be rock and roll. Well, this one is rock and roll. Definitely water related. And it's brought to you by the Ramones, Rockaway Beach.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You say your heart's been turned to stone. You say you wanna be left alone. You say love only made you weep and moan. Let me tell you something that you know in your bones.
Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the power that won't be stopped. Love is the water that wears down the rock.
You say your soul's like a dry riverbed. Stop waiting for the water long ago, you said. You better pray all night for the rain instead. Life comes like a tidal wave over your head.
Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the power that won't be stopped. Love is the water that wears down the rock.
You say waiting for love takes too long. Dulls a sharp mind, weakens the strong. Well, you may be right, but you may be wrong. 'Cause love can make a mountain come tumbling down.
Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the power that won't be stopped. Love is the water that wears down the rock.
The river washes over every woman and man,
feet
in the gravel and mud in your hands. Nothing can stand against love's command. Every boulder turns into a grain of sand.
Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the power that won't be stopped. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the water that wears down the rock. Love is the power that won't be stopped. Love is the water that wears down the rock.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We're here at WTBR FM 89.7 Pittsfield Community Radio, bringing on the water culture from the Berkshires to all around the world. And we're also at 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And you're also going to find us on all your major podcast platforms. Check out And So It Flows. Do yourself a little Google search and find it for yourselves, because we've been orientated all our lives. It's now to get disorientated, and we gotta figure it out. You're listening to And So It Flows, so it's cool to have ya.
Yeah.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm your Super Waterman, Ambassador for Water. Super psyched today. We're going to have a really great guest, Eric Wasileski from the Daniel Shays chapter of the Veterans for Peace. And Eric actually is a Navy man, a former Navy man, and we're going to look into, like, what's going on in the, what is it, the Persian Gulf? Because he was there. I wasn't. He was there. Many of our listeners may not have been there, but he was there, and we're going to have a little conversation about that. Super psyched that you're with us here, And So It Flows. It's kind of, you know, being Super Waterman is kind of like being Santa Claus and being responsible for other people's happiness, and I get to be responsible for their hydration and their water education, because it's something to be proud of, like that water, that H2O that gives us life. And that's the fun part. The fun part is, you know, being alive, because we could all flatline when we're dead, and it's the life part that that I'm interested in, and hopefully you are too. Super psyched to have you with us. Got a little water news coming your way. Let's see what we got here. This is, hold on, did I find it? Yeah, and this is coming from DW Der Willis, I think it's called. It's a German concern. And the story today that they have out is why reopening the Strait of Hormuz by force is so dangerous. And sit back and listen up.
If we see the world as one big factory, and right now one of its biggest and most important conveyor belts is out of commission. We know it carries oil and gas and lots of other things that fuel our machines, and that after just a month of living without it, the global economy is in serious trouble.
And so something will need to be done.
What we don't know is how on earth it's going to be reopened.
Recently published accounts indicating that Iran was charging up to $2 million per vessel to grant it safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz.
What is it actually going to take to unchoke the Strait of Hormuz?
It would be impossible to look those operators in the eyes and tell them you are absolutely safe.
Can the US really do anything to absolutely guarantee the safe passage of a ship carrying highly explosive gas or oil past a hostile military force armed with cheap drones?
Unfortunately, that's fanciful thinking at this point in time. Greater action would be needed.
So today we're breaking down why reopening Hormuz by force is so dangerous and whether it's even possible. Megan Sutcliffe is going to guide us through it. She's a security analyst for the Middle East and Africa with the consulting firm Sibylline. I started by asking her for context, for her to describe just how small and how tricky this little stretch of water is.
Well, it's unique, not least because of simply just how narrow it is. This is something that we see in waterways around the world and that often can implicate vessels in major delays, but also because of how shallow it is. Many waterways that we look at are actually very deep, and therefore very large vessels can move through them very freely without concerns about potentially the debris underneath it. Whereas the Strait of Hormuz is very shallow. Often the water is very, very light. And so essentially what that means is that when we're looking at the Strait of Hormuz, it has very unique geography, because as you move through it, you're entering up and moving very, very close to Iran's coastline through very shallow waters before eventually turning around the tip of Oman and then moving out into the Arabian Sea, into the Gulf of Oman. That makes it unique and makes it something that Iran is therefore able to uniquely manipulate, particularly in the context of war as we're seeing at the moment.
Megan leads us to a really important piece of this puzzle. That Iran is A, fully in charge of how many ships get through, but also B, how much those ships that want to pass have to pay to be guaranteed safe passage. It's what the rest of the world is now calling Tehran's toll booth.
in my mind, yes, the intelligence that we have regarding the state of play in the Strait of Hormuz is that Iran is leveraging its control of this waterway in order to extract facilitation payments from vessel operators. So, for example, Lloyd's List, another intelligence firm, recently published accounts indicating that Iran was charging up to $2 million US dollars per vessel to grant it safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz.
So that's the status quo. Shipping has ground to a halt, and clearly that needs to change in the eyes of the United States and Donald Trump, who is very market conscious and might rather be operating Trump's toll booth. But how do they reopen it? And how is it even possible that after a month of heavy attacks, that Iran is still in control?
So Iran is not known to still have a conventional navy. In the course of the Israel-US-Iran war, we have seen both Israel and the United States routinely engaging in airstrikes targeting vessels that form part of Iran's conventional navy. But many still assess that Iran has some non-conventional naval capabilities through the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Often the way that we see Iran's non-conventional navy working is by employing very small, very fast ships that are able to harass vessels, to redirect them into Iranian waters or into Iranian ports. But that's not the only way that Iran is able to manipulate the shipping levels as they move through the Strait of Hormuz. The other is essentially by threatening vessels.
So let's talk then about the possibility of sea mines. The US has high-tech missiles like the Tomahawk, next-generation fighter jets, massive aircraft carriers. But could an old-school piece of kit like a floating mine be deployed by Iran? Or have they already been deployed?
Well, we know that Iran has developed an arsenal of sea mines. Best estimates would indicate that by 2018, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps had produced at least 5,000 sea mines that could be used in any waters that surround Iran. And we know that also in the course of this conflict, the IDF has announced several rounds of airstrikes targeting facilities it characterized as sea mine production locations, such as facilities that are found in the Yazd province of Iran. And so this would indicate that Iran does have that capability. There isn't publicly available evidence to indicate that the Strait of Hormuz has been widely mined at this point, or that Iran has attempted to construct a barrier of mines that would critically disrupt vessel navigability or the navigability of this waterway. However, it is something they have within their arsenal, and it is possible that should we see pressure on Iran's security forces continue to mount, that we would see the IRGC deploying sea mines in a selective way within the Strait of Hormuz in order to deter the resumption of shipping. It wouldn't necessarily take a complete barrier of mines to be constructed across the 40 or so kilometers of the Strait of Hormuz to have an impact on global shipping. If we did see the deployment or even the detonation of several sea mines, insurers for vessels would become extremely concerned. Vessel operators would be terrified for the safety of their staff and their assets. And so we could expect shipping to essentially grind to a halt from the Persian Gulf until active demining had taken place.
So if there are already mines in these waters or not, shipping is behaving as if that threat were real. So what is the United States going to have to do to make it safe to get the world economy going again?
Generally speaking, one would need at least three naval vessels to accompany any given collective of ships to move through. That would include one vessel that was able to go ahead and essentially detect any potential incoming threats, whether those are missiles or drones, potentially employing submarines underneath to ensure that there were not underwater missiles being used to target vessels, essentially from the bottom up, as well as potential support vessels in case of the event of, say, targeting or successful targeting, particularly on the part of Iran when it comes to its capabilities with very cheaply and mass-produced drones. That means it is very expensive to provide a naval convoy. And although numerous vessels can participate within a naval convoy, so we're not talking about, say, three or four military vessels being used to transport every one commercial vessel, the larger that a commercial convoy becomes, the greater of a target that it is. And given how slowly shipping often moves through the Strait of Hormuz and the concerns that would be present for any vessel operator in that scenario, it would be extremely risky for any vessel that decided to do that during a period of active conflict, particularly given the broader strains that are present when it comes to the dynamics between the cost of air defences and the cost of drones when it comes to Iran's mass production capabilities.
So there are threats in the water that are cheap and plentiful, the sea mines, and there are threats in the air that are cheap and plentiful and really effective, drones. So if diplomacy fails or just never really happens, does the US really have any other option but to launch an offensive campaign to open the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, I think the status quo at the moment is clearly not working for the overwhelming majority of commercial vessels. And so something will need to be done. It is entirely possible that the provision of naval convoys and a subsidy program for political risk insurance for vessels that wanted to move through the Strait of Hormuz could loosen that up very, very slightly. It is also possible that Saudi Arabia continues to export its oil and gas via the port of Jeddah, and that other policy measures could be implemented there to increase the activity at that port, essentially bypassing the Strait of Hormuz by going straight to the Red Sea. But again, these are all mitigation measures. They are not replacement measures. And so the idea that anything could reopen the Strait of Hormuz very, very rapidly with low cost and low risk, unfortunately, that's fanciful thinking at this point in time. Greater action would be needed.
Right. As we've heard, reopening the Strait of Hormuz isn't just a military challenge. It's a high-risk gamble in one of the world's narrowest, shallowest and most contested waterways. With Tehran effectively running a toll booth and tensions still rising, there doesn't seem to be a viable option without potentially very serious consequences. We'll stay on this story as the situation shifts and the stakes rise. Thanks for watching. For now, it's goodbye.
Now, I'm going to give everybody a little bit of homework of what they would do. I'll tell you what I would do. Say, I would apologize and make restitution. Perhaps that might be a way of ending this incredible addiction to violence that is counterproductive and, in my world, obsolete. We'll have more of that discussion when we bring Eric on. But beyond that, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
Hi, yes, I put an order in with you guys. I just wanted to call and get credit because whoever delivered it forgot the jug of water.
I apologize for inconvenience, though I not understand.
I ordered one jug of water that was not delivered, so I just wanted to get credit, please.
Sir, I don't see anything here in your order that says jug of water. What language is that, sir?
English. It's the only language I speak fluently.
Sir, may you spell jug of water?
Jug of water. J-U-G-G. A-H-W-A-D-D-A-H.
Sir, if you want credit, you must first speak correct English.
Buddy, I speak better English than you do.
No need be racist. No MAGA necessary here.
Has nothing to do with MAGA. I just want my credit for my jug of water.
Buddy, sir, I hang up now. Have a nice day. No more political anger, please.
I'm not even political. I just want my jug of water. Hello? Hello? How does he not understand jug of water? You know, sometimes I don't even know what planet I'm on.
Was a ship that went to sea, the name of the ship was a belly of tea. The winds blew purple, the burn of blue. My bully boys blow. 'Twas a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a belly of tea. The winds blew up her bow, the burn of blow. My bully boys blow.
Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
She had not been 2 weeks from shore when down under a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore
he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
For the boy
troubled. I'd hit the water, the wheels still came up and caught her to the sea, tarpened and fought her
when she dragged them over.
Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We're here in the Berkshires at WTBR FM 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio 88.1, WSBR in Lee, and anywhere you get your podcasts from. So check us out. Give us a good subscribe. Give us a great little heart. Give it love, share it with your water-loving friends, and then move on to your next episode. And super psyched in studio at this moment in time, I have Eric Wasileski from the Daniel Shays chapter of the Pittsfield chapter, or Berkshire County chapter of Veterans for Peace. You want to say a big hello to your water-loving fans around the world. Hi there.
Thanks for having me on today. Yeah, hello, water-loving fans around the world. Yeah, my name is Eric Wasileski, and I am the founding coordinator for Chapter 186 of Veterans for Peace, the Daniel Shays chapter.
How do you get the number on that? Is that like 186 chapters in the country, or just you chose 186?
No, there are 186 chapters worldwide.
Gotcha.
So we are still the newest chapter. We were founded in November, so we are still the newest chapter, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, that's an interesting conversation around, why would veterans be for peace? I can tell you why I am, but why?
Well, I can speak for myself, why I'm a member of Veterans for Peace.
Yeah.
And I found that the theory of force theory of peace by force is a misidentity of what peace is. And so when you use violence force, when you use coercion, you can't actually make peace. And coercive force can only create order. And order is a masquerader of peace. And so peace does have order to it. And it's an order that comes from love. And it's not an order that comes from coercion. And so if violence worked to make peace, we would have had peace a long time ago.
Yeah, way long time ago.
And what you've been saying lately about war being obsolete, I agree with that 100%. When we go to war nowadays, we have destroys the environment, the water, the earth. It destroys the soldiers, the sailors, the airmen, Marines that are there. They come home and suicide rate is 22 per day for veterans.
22 per day.
22 per day. Over 6,000 a year.
Wow.
Yep. And there's a group, Mission 22. It's a veterans group that is working hard on that issue. I'm a part of that group. I've been part of that group over the years. It's a group that's helpful. So Veterans for Peace, our mission is to eliminate war as an instrument of national policy. We also have a couple other missions. One of them is to not allow for the police to be militarized. Talking about weapons of mass destruction, how racism is inherent as part of warfare. A few other things. I don't have the mission statement in my hand right now, but that's basically what Veterans for Peace is about.
Yeah, you know, and what we were listening to on the news before, where that was some news about the Strait of Hormuz. Just think of all that money. You're talking about at least $1 billion a day in the first couple of days of that entire thing. What we could do with that money.
Yeah, it's disturbing to think about how much we waste on that, and we look at the human needs that we have here in this country.
Yeah.
We look at the needs we have for our infrastructure.
Paved roads, schools.
These potholes we're looking at, you know, as a direct result of this war, because we don't have the money to fill up the potholes except until spring. And so they fill them up in the spring. So it's just a trickle down. We're seeing all of our money being involved in this war, and there's always money for more war. And we're seeing our streets and our bridges and our schools falling apart. And it's just a misunderstanding of where our priorities are, as what's real security is. You know, a school leads to more security than a tank.
Yeah, and that, I mean, those facts are super important. And I think there's another one. And one of the reasons I became an associate member, because last person in my family to fight was my grandfather, who was a lieutenant in the Kaiser's army. Sorry, wrong side, folks. But beyond that, it's like the Second World War. My parents were kids, and they had to be in what's called the Siege of Budapest. So imagine a city, let's say maybe 10 times, 20 times the size of Pittsfield. Big area, that you would not have water, electricity, and bombs were dropping on your head. And you start to see, like, the like, what a waste, you know, like, and doing this to people. You have a different perspective when you're in a diner talking about it, thinking that, you know, rah-rah, it's a football game. And there's another impact when it's incoming. And that's really the impact that I come from, is like, how can we spare people such unnecessary suffering? Unnecessary.
It is unnecessary. And life is suffering. That's one of the first laws of Buddhism. But we can do a lot to ameliorate suffering.
Yeah.
And what you were talking about earlier, the Budapest, you know, you have what's called generational trauma. And so it's not like you're out of this scot-free. And I'm sure your kids have generational trauma from that war, too.
Yeah.
My dad was drafted. My dad enlisted before he got drafted. My grandfather was drafted. So my family has always been in the military. And that stuff, it piles up and builds up, and it generational trauma is there, and it's there for all of us now that have been dealing with successive wars for every generation.
Yeah.
And now, never-ending war since 1991, you know, here in the United States. These oil wars started in 1991. And it's I think we're all tired of these forever wars for oil. So if a simple thing to do would be, you know, build solar panels, build windmills, wind turbines, and to generate electricity other ways. Oil is not sustainable, and it's destroying our environment.
We could make motorboats. We could do, you know, lots of other things. Sell toys. Thing that Pittsfield was known for just a few years back, it was the corporate headquarters of KB Toy Stores, which, if you're a parent out there or a grandparent, you may know and remember being in a mid-sized toy store which sold some wood toys, and the kind of happiness it brought to your kids and family for having a place to go. And that was, you know, vulture capitalized by a former governor and his investment group to, you know, sell it off for parts and load it up with debt and tens of, you know, thousands of jobs lost. But the toy stuff is definitely something that Pittsfield has a connection to.
Yeah, I think that you're mentioning sort of leading up to our Earth Day. We're Veterans for Peace, local chapter of 186. We're planning on an Earth Day action, which is related to the water.
It is. I've seen water on Earth before.
Yeah, it's without the Earth, without the water, the Earth isn't what it is.
Yeah, 75%. Yeah,
it's a magical thing. So on Earth Day, there's a manufacturing happening in our city. We still do have manufacturing, thankfully. But they're manufacturing vehicles which are going to the police state. ICE is buying them. Border Patrol is buying them. And I'm talking about Lenco. Industries, which is on Bettner Ave.
Yeah.
Bettner Drive, I guess it is. And so they are actively profiting off of militarizing our police. And what our police are, our militarized police are doing right now is despicable and unconscionable. So on Earth Day, we're going to walk out there and we're going to raise awareness about what's actually happening there, that they're building ICE vehicles in our town when they could be building solar panels, when they could be building wind turbines and toys.
And I think there's going to be, what I heard is there's going to be some singing there.
Yeah, we're going to have singing out there. We're going to have the Persisters are going to be out there, Veterans for Peace. We're going to roll out the red carpet and invite the whole valley in, the whole Berkshire's in. And we'll see who comes. I think we're going to have a significant showing. Folks are upset with how our military is being, our police are being militarized. And I think with good right. And not just are they being militarized with their equipment, but they're also being trained in Israel. They were going over there and being trained by Israelites, by the Israelis.
The IDF.
The IDF. And they're learning these tactics that they were using against the Palestinians. And so they're treating us as our civilian personnel here in the United States are being treated the same way that the IDF treats the Palestinians. And it's time to speak out about it. We can't let it stand.
You know, and I think part of that actually is like there's a recognition of the people uniting beyond left and right, beyond people uniting. It's kind of like the story of Lee, Massachusetts, and we'll jump in back into this. In Lee, Mass, where there's a suggestion, still hasn't been realized, but still a strong suggestion of putting in a PCB dump right on the banks of the Housatonic River Valley. And then when that came to light, there was a strong bi or tri or all sorts of partisans coming together to sweep out the people who were on the select board.
Good.
That allowed for that to happen. And one of friend of the show, Robert Jones, who's on the select board, he'll be actually speaking at an event that also Veterans for Peace is putting on, which is called, what's it called?
Deep Dive.
Oh, Deep Dive.
Yeah, it's a Deep Dive.
Deep Dive.
And we're bringing
It's an initiative, actually. It's like, okay.
It's a starting point.
It's a starting point for a project calling It's Time to Bring Veterans to the Fore around environmental, being an environmentalist.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we're doing is we noticed that at Camp Lejeune, a veteran did a lot of work on documenting cancer rates, and there are some... You know, we want to start documenting the cancer rates here as related to the water. As people know, our waterways here have been polluted by GE, and Silver Lake is one of the most polluted bodies of water in the world. And we want to try to help clean it up. And we don't want to leave this mess for our kids. And we feel like it's an opportunity to start a new job opportunities.
There's job opportunities. You got
environmental...
production.
Reclamation. There's a lot of possibility there. We have really gone a long way to trying to destroy our wonderful ecosystems. Accidentally, I'm not saying we're doing it on purpose, but it certainly wasn't, the environment wasn't thought of. And it's important for us to start thinking about our environment as we move forward.
Exactly. It's kind of like the container in which our economies and our lives are in, which is the container of the environment. So any other systems that are here have to answer to that.
And another thing, too, when we start talking about the environmental destruction and problems that we're having, they're not just local problems, they're international problems. And the only way to solve these international problems is to work with Russia and to work with China and to work with Brazil, work with all these nations that are actually, you know, we're calling enemies. We can't get to where we want to get to, which is a sustainable, stable world, if we're calling the people that we need to work with enemies.
Yeah, and if we're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You know, it's, you know, like anything, bashing people over the head with bombs and guns and bullets.
So yeah,
doesn't actually work.
When you're saying that war is obsolete, it's obsolete in so many ways and for so many reasons.
And we should make pollution obsolete as well. You know, figure out how to live like in India. They got rid of plastic bags, but then they started making bags out of jute. Jute is a fiber that is a hemp-like material.
That sounds all right. I don't know.
You know,
good for the economy.
Good for the economy. Put people to work, and you know, and you have something that lasts, and it also biodegrades.
Yeah, one of the things that Gandhi told us that you know, building, making your own clothes, and then making your own bags. That's good for the economy, and it's good for you personally. So it's not just a good economy; it's also happiness in self to have built your own clothing and be sustainable and self-reliant.
Yeah,
there's a lot to that. And we're missing out on a lot of those things in life.
Especially if we think that life is a throwaway, and that's really context related. So let's jump into the deep dive, and then we'll go back a little bit on some of the other thoughts. And I know you have a joke that's there, so we're gonna get to that. But for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm your super waterman, Leslie Gabriel, your ambassador for water, bringing it in from the Berkshires to all around our big blue marble. Super psyched. Check us out on all your major podcast platforms. And I'm sitting here with Eric Wasileski. He runs or is the head coordinator for the Berkshires chapter of Veterans for Peace, and they're the Daniel Shays Chapter 186. And I don't think Daniel was much of a sailor himself, but you were a sailor.
Yeah, no, Daniel was part of the Continental Army, fighting for independence of the country.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a sailor, yeah. I was in the Navy. I spent 6 years in the Navy. I was stationed on board USS Stout, which is a guided missile destroyer out of Norfolk. I did two cruises. I did a cruise to former Yugoslavia in 1996, and I did a cruise to Iraq in 1998, where I had this opportunity to sail through the Strait of Hormuz. And the thing that was really racking about that whole thing that I remember was actually the transiting the Nile. So we had the Suez. We had to transit the Suez first, and as we're transiting the Suez, there were some burnt out tanks from the 1967 that was just sitting there on the side of the Suez Canal, and I remember seeing those canal those tanks and feeling of foreboding, and realizing, you know, in the metaphoric way that I'm not in Kansas anymore. So getting into those waters was kind of it was kind of a rite of passage going through the Suez to get over there. when you're going through the actual strait, you can see the shore, and they're so close to you that there's no way that you have time to react if they start firing at you. You barely have time to react if they launch ships at you. If there are mines in the water there, they can't send, submarines can't operate there because it's too shallow. So the defending, one of the serious, most significant defending bodies that the ships have are under the water with the subs, and so they can't operate in that area. It's a mess.
It's a tight spot.
It's a mess, and I think that your idea of making reparations and is the only sane idea. And I'll just say this: that as a child, I remember one of the first things I remember was the Shah of Iran being deposed, and the Shah was placed there by CIA agents. He was kicked out by the Iranian Revolution, and you know this regime that we have now was installed. The Khomeini era started because the United States puppet was kicked out of Iran.
Yeah, that was in 1953 that we overthrew a democratically elected, of course, standing for democracy. It was the United States and the MI5, which is the folks over in In Great Britain. Their spy agency said we got to get rid of Mossadegh, and this, everything that's been happening for the last 50 years around Iran has actually been out of blowback from 25 years earlier. So you're talking about 75 years of blowback from meddling.
And even before that, the World War One. If it's like, what was World War One about? It was really about the West taking control and killing off the Ottoman Empire.
Uh-huh.
That's what World War One was. And so this stuff we're dealing with right now are left over from that.
Can we get beyond the Crusades? That's my thought.
I don't know if we can.
Can we actually get beyond the Crusades? And
that's a good question.
Yeah, that's going to be a question for the listeners who want to take a look at what's actually going to be our future. Yeah.
Just responding to that, the Pope just recently said that, and this is the Crusades were a Catholic war. You know, it's a religious war, the Crusades were.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the Pope saying that nowadays, saying that you can't pray for war, that God doesn't hear war prayers, that's a significant change in how Christianity is approaching the theory of conflict. And it has to be noted, I think, that the power structure of the church in World War II was an agent of the state. Now what we're seeing right here at this, I think it's okay to call it World War III. Now that we're here in World War III, we're seeing the church act as an agent for peace, which is another thing entirely. And I feel like it's an evolution of society, and we're going to see different fruits because our church, our religious institutions are having different teachings.
Yeah, I think evolution come is like what I call H2 of evolution. It's the evolution with an R because there's some pirates. Related to that.
We got some pirate joke here.
Yeah, let's go right into your pirate joke. Talk to us.
Okay, so where did the pirate get his hook from?
I don't know.
Where does the pirate? Yeah. Pirate got his hook at the secondhand store.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay. So the pirate gets his hand. So cat. Okay,
at
that's
the hook.
Funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's funny. That was a good one.
And maybe you want to put the hook on my comedy career after that one. But
that's great. So let's dive into this deep dive thing.
Sure.
So you were talking about Jerry Ensminger, the master sergeant who took on the Defense Department and got $2.5 billion in coverage from the Defense Department to speak to health, finances, and impact of the poison water that was at Camp Lejeune. And he became a friend of mine over the last 15 or so years. And one of the things that's going to be at that deep dive event, we're going to have a doctor, Robert Westpizer. He's actually from the health department in Lee. He's going to actually be speaking to the needs for medical testing, getting good data. And because there's so many other things that impact, that get impacted by PCBs. It's not just cancer. It's lots of other things.
And wildlife, too. It's not just
wildlife,
human beings.
Yeah.
It's the earth.
It's the earth.
When you take that water and they put it in the fields, it affects our wild stock. It affects, if we eat that food, it affects the whole ecosystem. It's everything.
And there definitely is a direct connect between those PCBs and the Department of Defense, because it is a defense contractor.
Absolutely.
And perhaps we could get the ability for folks to get restitution. And while that might seem like a long shot, it definitely could.
It's happened before.
We could definitely bring that kind of attention. And the person who's actually going to be the keynote speaker, his name is Chris Hedges, famous author, famous journalist, who was kicked out of polite society for starting to tell the truth as the Mideast bureau chief for the New York Times.
Yeah, he was a war correspondent.
Yeah.
And so writing about war all that time, he saw the futility of it. And we're going to bring him in here to talk about that.
He's also a divinity student. He
went to seminary. Yep, sure did.
He graduated from Harvard.
I'm not sure if he's ordained or not, but he definitely went.
I think he's ordained.
Yeah, he probably got ordained.
He is ordained. So he's going to be speaking at the UCC Church, United Church of Christ, on April 25th. That's a Saturday. And there's a long game here. The game is attention, taking a look at what the impact is, and rolling General Electric to move beyond stalling and get into the world of reclamation and cleanup.
That's right.
Creating jobs and money for themselves and others, and bringing good things to life, called rivers and economies, and cities. Because it's not just, it's just not the Northeast, or there are places in, you know, all over the country that are dealing with the same exact issues of hollowing out.
And not only just across the country, but across the world.
You know, yeah.
Okinawa, and I'm sure our base is in Europe. Wherever the United States has base, there's got to be contamination plumes all around them.
Yeah.
The water is contaminated.
Yeah. It's important that we learn how to clean up. And that's actually one of the reasons, not the only reason that this show is here, but one of the reasons to create a relationship such that you even find it of value to do the thing that is being asked of us, because it is such a big request. You know, making war obsolete, making pollution obsolete, and creating a life worth living, because really we could flatline when we're dead, number one. And number two, you know, why don't bring a little bit of joy to the world?
Yeah, and speaking of joy, those of us that were here on No Kings on Saturday, that was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was fun time to come together and stand against the craziness, the insanity of this world that we're dealing with. And so
there was a frog there too, water related creature.
It was, you know, here we had 3,000. There was, you know, up and down the Berkshires we had thousands, but nationwide there somewhat estimated of 8 million people were standing out.
It's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people, and it's exciting. And so making change can be fun. It doesn't have to be scary. And change is always going to be is a necessary element of life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Gandhi used to teach is that the only constant thing in this universe is change. And so how do we navigate that change and look ahead and see what those kind of changes we need to have? That's when you have a happy life, and that's when you're having a society that's heading the right way.
Yeah.
And we need to start looking that way if we want to try to. If we don't, we're going to be in trouble, real trouble.
How can people find out more about the Veterans for Peace, Daniel Shea's chapter? You guys have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we do have a Facebook page. We have a national website. So if you go on veteransforpeace.org, you can read about us there. You get my contact information on that national website. EricWozleski@gmail.com. If you want to send me an email, I'm happy to chat with you. We offer pre-enlistment counseling. If your kids are joining the military, bring them to us. We'll talk to them. And we're not just going to necessarily try to talk them out of getting in the military. Well, we will do that. But we also want to make sure they're getting all the benefits that they deserve. Recruiters lie. They're a car salesman. And so we want to make sure the kids get their benefits that they can get. We also want to let them know that if they see anything while they're on active duty, where to go with it. Give it to us and we will get it out.
You want a jobs program? You can have the training without the killing. And
the other thing that Veterans for Peace offers is welcome home counseling.
Uh-huh.
When veterans come home, oftentimes they don't have a lot of guidance. They don't know really what to do. And so we want to talk to them then and help them get into school, make sure they've gotten hooked into the VA, let them know that their feelings that they're having are natural and normal, but we all feel the same way because they're feeling isolated, they're feeling betrayed, and they're hurting. So when they come home, they're feeling differently than when they join.
Yeah.
And so welcome home counseling is one of the best things that we do.
Definitely, definitely. Thanks again for joining the show. You're listening to And So It Flows. A big welcome again, and a thank you to Eric Wozleski. Thanks for sharing about Veterans for Peace. And what we're doing now is hopefully making room for the Strait of Hormuz for these type of animals, baby belugas, to be safe there once again.
In your waterbed, moon is shining and the stars
Oops.
Are out. Good night, little whale, good.
I'm going to start at the beginning. Here we go. Rafi.
That came out all right. It was a good show.
Baby beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above and the the sea below, and a little white quail along the gold. Baby beluga, baby beluga, is the water warm? Is your mama home with you so happy? Way down yonder where the dolphins play, where you dive and splash all day. Waves rolling and the waves roll out, see the water squirting out of your spout. Baby beluga, oh baby beluga, sing your little song, sing for all your friends, we like to hear you. And fed, curl up snug in your water bed. Moon is shining and the stars are out. Good night, little whale, good night. Baby beluga, oh baby beluga, with tomorrow's sun, another day's begun. You'll soon be waking. Baby beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above and the sea below, and a little white whale on the go. You're just a little white whale on the go.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, in trouble. Abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.